This is Wisconsin Today. The monarch butterfly is one of the most recognizable species in North America, but their numbers have been declining for years.
There are a number of potential factors that could play a part, including habitat loss and climate change. New evidence reveals a major suspect. U.S. researchers point to pest management on farms.
A 17-year-long study suggests that particular insecticides have been the biggest factor in bringing down butterfly numbers on top of land use and climate change. Scott Swinton is a professor in agricultural and environmental economics at Michigan State University, co-author of that study, and Karen Oberhauser is a professor emeritus in entomology at UW-Madison. Karen, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
And Scott, thanks for being with us.
Happy to join you.
Scott, let's start with this long-term study. You're one of the co-authors. Give us some background as to how and why this study started and took this long-term look at this issue of butterflies.
We had an opportunity to get an 17-year data set, about the kinds of inputs that farmers use in the Midwest. And when I say inputs, I mean pesticide, seeds, fertilizers, as well as their tillage methods. So what we did was we linked this big data set about the kinds of inputs that farmers are using with data on butterflies that have been observed in 81 different counties in America. So what we were able to do is put together a data set that lets us disentangle the effects of six different kinds of pesticides, two different kinds of herbicides, glyphosate, which is Roundup, and all other herbicides was one comparison. Among insecticides, we have sprayed insecticides. There are two big groups of those. And then we have systemic insecticides, which are insecticides that are absorbed in with the plant seed and are all through the plant as the crop plant grows. And we have a data set that goes from 1998 to 2014, and that allows us to identify changes that happened during that period of time.
Now, Karen, I want to put a pin, and we'll get into those results that Scott and his team found. I want to talk about the stakes a little bit. You've been following butterflies through your work at the Arboretum, your work as an entomologist around the state. What have we seen over the years when it comes to butterflies here in Wisconsin?
Well, the same as we've seen in all of the states that Scott's study looked at, monarch numbers, along with other butterfly numbers, are in general declining. Now, this isn't the case with every single species of butterfly. It certainly has been for monarchs over the period that we've been studying them. So what's exciting about this study, which really pulled together people from many different disciplines, is our ability to really dig into the data and think about how the changing practices in agriculture, how what we as humans are doing on the land can impact other species. A lot of people come up to me and say they're just not seeing as many monarch butterflies as they have in the past. So everyone notices that. They notice when the numbers go a little bit up during a season, but they know in general, they're seeing fewer monarchs than they did in the past. And monarchs just happen to be the butterfly that everybody recognizes.
So Scott, you tried to disentangle all these different potential factors as I understand the study. One stood out in particular. What was that?
What stood out in particular was the effect of neonicotinoid seed treatments, which is an insecticidal seed treatment, on it reducing butterfly abundance in general during the period, and species richness, which is the diversity of different butterfly species. For both butterfly abundance and species richness, the amounts declined by 8% between 1998 and 2014. The other thing that really jumped out was the effect on monarch butterflies, where they declined over 20% due again to the neonicotinoids.
Karen, did that surprise you that this one particular agricultural product seemed to have such a big link with decline in monarch butterfly numbers and butterfly numbers in general?
Yeah, It did surprise me. And I think it's really important to point out something that the paper did really well is say that as we're studying these species, how we as humans live on the land and manage the land is changing. And the study really pointed out well that the neonicotinoids are kind of new on the scene. And a lot of the decline in monarchs had started before that. And we, as the paper pointed out, habitat loss had pretty much leveled off at the time that neonicotinoids came onto the scene. So it was really interesting to me that this came out as such a strong signal in monarch numbers, but I'm excited that we've learned this now, because in order to minimize our impacts as humans on monarchs and other species, we need to really understand what these impacts are. And this paper really goes a long way toward our ability to do that.
And Scott, Karen highlights an important takeaway here. I think the answer here isn't it is only this neonicotinoid class of pesticides that's causing the problem here. That's just one that stands out among the others that are also contributing factors. Do I have that right?
Yes. In fact, I mean, Leslie Rice would be quick to point out that the biggest factor that drives butterfly population increases and decreases from year to year is the weather. If it's warm and wet, you get more butterflies. But among the things that humans control, what we've seen here is that during this period from 1998 to 2014, neonicotinoids had a strong and negative effect. And I would add to Karen's point, you know, one important change in agriculture earlier than that was the introduction of Roundup Ready crops, which happened between 1992 and 1994 for corn and soybeans. And the effects of reduced availability of milkweed and other forage species may already have declined by the time we started looking at things in 1998. So we didn't get a signal about herbicides having a role here, but that just as Karen said, that land use has not changed very much during this period, the level of use of glyphosate herbicide was already pretty high by the beginning of our study.
We're talking about what is driving declines in butterfly populations, including monarch butterflies in the Midwest. Big new study. Scott Swinton, co-author of that study with Michigan State University. Karen Oberhauser with us, professor emeritus of entomology at UW-Madison. Karen, with what we already knew and now factoring in this new report, what stands out to you as top priorities, main action points when it comes to helping restore our butterfly populations?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And I think one way to think about this is that the amount of habitat that's available to monarchs and other butterflies sort of sets a ceiling. So no matter what we do in other factors, the amount of habitat that's available to them will determine how many butterflies we can produce. So if you imagine sort of a line that's a little bit like an EKG, and the line is going up and down. And like Scott said, a lot of that year to year up and down that we see in monarch numbers is driven by the weather. But behind that up and down pattern that we see that's weather driven, we have all of these other facts that tend to be changing over time. So the use of neonicotinoids started low and then it went up over time. So it's not something that's kind of swaying madly up and down from year to year. So what this tells me is that sort of no matter what the factor is that we're looking at, habitat is key. And because we have this weather-driven year-to-year variation in monarch numbers, and because weather is not a consistent thing, we're having relatively hot and wet weather right now in the upper Midwest this year. Other parts of the country are drier. So what we need is habitat available over lots and lots of land so that monarchs and other butterflies will be able to do well across all of these years with the changing weather patterns. And then on top of that, we can use information from studies like the one that we're talking about that Scott co-authored to help us understand how to kind of give them the added boost that they need, with the assumption that we're working as hard as we can to provide habitat.
Yeah, Scott, what are some of the takeaways you and your colleagues are hoping people start to use your study for to try to put things into action?
Well, Rob, I think two things. One is we did this study that included data on these neonicotinoid insecticides that are no longer publicly available. And so one action item would be for the U.S. Geological Survey and public data sources to continue to be able to track this kind of use so that we can keep up with this. But there's a second piece that, Rob, I'll say is not an action point, but I think it's an important thing to understand. And that is why we've seen the rise of these neonicotinoid seed treatments. And that's actually a great example of science responding to one problem, but creating an unexpected problem at the same time. So the original problem was that around the year 2000, an invasive insect from East Asia, the soybean aphid, began to spread rapidly in soybean fields in the Midwest. And it reduced soybean yields by as much as 20%. And I worked with a number of entomologists on how to manage this with integrated pest management practices. But the chemical companies came up with a solution, which was to treat soybean seed with these neonicotinoid insecticides. And they were very effective as systemic insecticides in killing soybean aphids. And that brought yields back up. And so farmers adopted these seeds rapidly because they solved a pest problem for farmers. And so now that we know that, you know, we're in a position for developing new ways to manage this. But this was actually partly a successful commercial scientific response to a farmer pest problem.
Listeners are often curious, hey, are there things I can do in my yard or encourage my local government to do to help out with things like habitat? What would you tell people?
Well, I tell them there's a lot they can do. Butterflies will use almost any kind of habitat, including people's backyards or their places of worship, where they go to school, where they work. So habitat is a big one, and making safe habitat that has nectar plants and host plants for butterflies is important. People can spread the word. They can tell their friends and family about what they can do to help. And now that we have this information, thinking about food production, how we produce our food matters. So producers and consumers can make more informed choices. Also, something that I would really like to point out, Scott just mentioned the importance of data. The importance of data on pesticide use is important, but this study also couldn't have been done without data produced by all of these citizen scientists who were going out and watching butterflies. So we need that information, and people can find out there are lots and lots of ways to provide information about butterflies. In Wisconsin, we have the wisconsinbutterflies.org, where people can report any butterfly they see. They can join a monarch butterfly citizen science project, like the Monarch Larva Monitoring Project or Journey North. There are just lots and lots of ways that people can help provide data that help us tease out these kinds of relationships. And finally, the last thing people can do if they don't have their own habitat, they don't have a yard, is support organizations that are working on habitat conservation and agricultural sustainability. So there's lots of ways that people can get involved to help out.
And we'll leave it there. Karen, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks. It was really great to be with you, Rob.
And Scott, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Rob, and thank you, Karen. It's been a pleasure.
Scott Swinton is a professor in agricultural and environmental economics at Michigan State University, co-author of the study we've been talking about, and Karen Oberhauser is professor emeritus of entomology at UW-Madison.